You will recall, dear listeners, that when those amusing documents known as the Panama Papers were released, we turned to Jason Sharman as our guide to some of the complexities of tax evasion and money laundering, because the good professor is one of the experts on money laundering and how criminal gangs and corrupt elites use financial institutions to move their ill-gottens around the planet. So we've turned to him to get some more informed perspective on the problems facing the Commonwealth Bank. As I said, his latest book is enchantingly titled The Despot's Guide to Wealth Management. And Jason used to be one of us. He was at Griffiths. He's since moved not to the Caymans but to Cambridge, where he is now a Professor of International Relations. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Jason, you must be following with fascination and perhaps even amusement what's been going on here with the Commonwealth Bank. Are you surprised they've been caught out by their so-called intelligent deposit machines?
I'm surprised for two reasons. One, that in some ways the scheme was so crude and simple and yet effective. And then I'm pleasantly surprised that the Australian Government Authority has done something about it and looks likely to be holding the Commonwealth Bank to account.
Well, I know in the past you've been critical of AUSTRAC for its failure to prevent or prosecute, but in this case they've... Well, they must have been listening to you, Jason.
Perhaps.
But it is good, isn't it, that someone is at least having a go?
It is good, you're right. I think it's a case of better 29 years late than never. This is the first major enforcement action that AUSTRAC has ever taken against an Australian bank, ever since we've had anti-money laundering law in Australia since 1988. So it's really an unprecedented case and an important one, and also kind of an astonishing one in many ways.
When banks talk about compliance and money laundering regulations, Jason, what are their legal responsibilities?
I suppose the legal responsibilities can be summed up in the term know your customer. And this is the idea that governments have delegated financial surveillance to private institutions, mainly though not exclusively banks. And banks have a duty to screen their customers and monitor their customers, see if their customers are engaged in any suspicious activity, and lastly to make sure that their customers are who they say they are.
So blissful ignorance is bad enough, but willful ignorance is even worse. Has new technology like these wretched machines and virtual currencies made it more difficult for financial institutions to be compliant?
I think one of the most surprising things about this case is it's not the technology, but in reading the actual documents that AUSTRAC, the Australian Government Agency, submitted to the Federal Court. In many cases, or many instances of this case, it's people who sell drugs turning up to a bank with a big bag of cash and depositing it with no questions being asked, and then them doing this day after day for months and in some cases years. So it's really the most kind of low-tech, simple and crude types of money laundering you can imagine, which is part of the reason I'm so surprised that they got away with it for this long.
Jason, you wrote earlier in the year in discussing banks dealing with the proceeds of corruption that, and I quote, the trouble is thanks to their political influence and economic importance, banks are almost never punished for their failures. This current issue isn't about corruption, but does the same argument apply that banks really don't fear or feel they'll be seriously punished?
Yes, I think it's true, and up until last week, they were right. I mean, they had a perfect record of not being not suffering any enforcement action or sanctions by the Australian government, which has tended to cost the large financial institutions of Australia when it comes to financial crime, and as often the Australian government's attitude is more one of sweeping things under the rug rather than taking firm and robust action. But I'm happy to see that over the last week, at least in this instance, that's changing.
Jason, give us some examples of other major banks getting caught up in similar cases.
Well, Australia has in some ways been the exception because for most major international banks, It's actually quite hard to name one that has not been caught up in a similar problem of either accepting large volumes of tainted funds or sanction busting or engaging in tax evasion. So, I mean, the failure to apply sanctions against Australian banks either suggests that the Australian banks have been unusually and uniquely virtuous over the last almost three decades, or that the regulatory agencies in Australia have been asleep at the wheel. So really all of the household names of big international banking have been caught out over the last decade.
And have they copped spectacular fines?
They have up to, you know, they're really measured in the billions now. So the latest one against a French bank, BNP Paribas, almost $9 billion US. And in some ways, just as importantly, regulators overseas are now bringing criminal charges against banks, which the Australian government so far has been too scared to do, even though it has very, very strong powers under Australian legislation to do so, which would probably be justified in this case involving the Commonwealth Bank.
As you know, this latest frisson with the CBA is adding to demands pretty much across the spectrum for a royal commission into our banking system. Do you have a view on whether that's desirable?
I think there's certainly a need to look further and ask harder questions about what's going on in the banking system. And given that we've had a lot of regulators whose effectiveness has been, you know, at best questionable, I think a Royal Commission is not a bad idea.
It's interesting at the moment that we also hear a lot of commentators discussing, you know, new forms of financial chicanery or mystery, like, you know, virtual currencies like Bitcoin. And there's an argument that banks may be in their dotage. They may be in their final decades of power and influence.
Possibly. I mean, if you certainly don't get that sense from looking at banks' profit margins and market shares in Australia. Certainly, the rise of the new technologies that you've mentioned and other so-called fintech makes a wonder. But I think really for the foreseeable future, for legitimate and legal customers and for criminals, any time you really want to get money from A to B, banks are by far the most important channel of doing that. So to the extent that we want to stop money laundering, banks are the crucial point of vulnerability there. And clearly from recent developments, we have not got the problem fixed.
Jason, several commentators here have made the point that CBA clearly was concerned about compliance with money laundering regulations because they kept hiring former AUSTRAC employees, over 40 apparently, to help them.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big problem for anti-money laundering agencies, not just in Australia, that they get a lot of their staff poached by by banks or other big private financial institutions. But the sneaking suspicion, and it's certainly shored up by this case, is that in many instances the compliance department is there as decoration or window dressing. It's really designed to impress regulators, to stop regulators causing problems for banks while banks get on with their business. And obviously that can be a problem where you've got the patterns of really incredible incompetence shown up by the Commonwealth Bank in this case.
You know, as you're well aware, ordinary punters around the place are intensely unhappy at finding their own finances under great stress, watching these exponential profits by banks like the CBA, and a remarkable lack of white-collar criminality as, you know, being recognised as a consequence. We're still waiting for any significant legal repercussions from the global financial crisis.
Yeah, I think people are exactly right to be angry about that sort of inaction. And again, it's not through lack of legal powers. The Australian government has a very powerful ability to prosecute banks criminally for being reckless or negligent when it comes to money laundering and other financial crime. And given the documents lodged by AUSTRAC in the federal court, I find it just really very hard to imagine that the Commonwealth Bank's behaviour does not constitute recklessness and negligence.
Is there a chance that governments are also averting their eyes, that they're not asking the hard questions?
Yeah, I think that's almost certainly true. Banks in and the financial industry more generally is very powerful in Australia, very powerful in most countries. And I think really the AUSTRAC, but more generally regulatory agencies, have often shied away from asking hard questions of those that they're meant to be supervising. And as the track record indicates, they've been very, very reluctant to impose meaningful sanctions. So the temptation is to really not ask hard questions and then certainly not take robust action against politically powerful financial institutions.
How robust are, in fact, the anti-laundering laws?
Not very robust at all, judging by the current... I mean, again, if you can go into a bank with $500,000 in cash in a suitcase and deposit it, and then wire it to an overseas address, and then come back and do that for 3 years without a major bank stopping you. This is, as I say, it's really the crudest and most simple form of money laundering you can get. If we're not catching that sort of behavior in between 2012 and 2017, when we had the first anti-money laundering laws in 1988, then really it's open season for money launderers.
As you probably know, the CEO of CBA is listening to the program. He always does. So here's your chance to give him some advice, Jason. What should CBA be doing?
I really think the problem is with the regulators. And I think that too often there's a tick box attitude when it comes to anti-money laundering, that the problem is, the goal of compliance in banks is not to catch criminals and not to screen out dirty money, but to impress regulators, or at least stop regulators snooping around and asking too many difficult questions. I think the irony of this is that both regulators and the private sector are now locked into a system where they both privately know that the system is not working very well, but for different reasons, it's in neither the regulator nor the bank's interest to point out the manifest failings of the existing system.
Jason, thanks for your time. It's good to talk to you again. Jason Sharman, Professor of International Relations at the Department of Politics and International Studies at the University of Cambridge.